So we just talked about this heartbreaking loss that the Bears suffered this past weekend. And in addition to talking about some of the worst, most heartbreaking moments, we're also going to talk about moments where it's okay. Basically, we're going to be talking about moments where it's okay to cry. Sports moments where it's okay to cry. And that means happy moments, too. So we're talking about the great moments and the bad moments. And we want to hear from you. Because, on Monday morning, Dan, when we were doing the show, at 4 o'clock, the WGN morning news comes on, the TV morning news, and I have it on two monitors in the studio here every morning, and they just kept showing people, like Bears fans' reactions as they watched it in a couple of different bars. Oh, man. It was terrible. It was terrible. So, so this is the kind of thing we're talking about. We're talking about the sports things where it's okay to cry. And it's on both sides, not necessarily. I mean, we're talking about heartbreaking moments, moments that were just, like, devastating. But moments that were also, like, either heartwarming or beautiful or exciting, and it was okay to cry. So we've got the 2001 World Series Paul O'Neill chants. This is a good one. During the 2001 World Series, which was expected to be O'Neill's last season in pinstripes, Yankees Universe wanted to give him a special parting gift, and boy, was it special. During the latter portions of Game 5 of the series, every mouth screamed the same two words like a chorus in harmony, Paul O'Neill, Paul O'Neill, Paul O'Neill. Gave you goosebumps just to watch it. It's extremely rare that you see Yankees fans get like that, and the way they got behind O'Neill that night was more than touching. Yeah. They didn't win that World Series, though. Who did they play that year? Am I nuts? Was it... I can't remember who they played that year. And it was one of those deals where... I didn't root for the Yankees. I rooted for whoever the other team was in the 2001 World Series. But everybody, I remember I got people were mad at me because I was not rooting for the Yankees because of what happened September 11th. Everybody was like, "You got to root for the Yankees," and I'm like, "No, I'm not gonna root for the Yankees."
That was the Diamondbacks series.
It was the Diamondbacks. Okay. Josh Hamilton in the 2008 Home Run Derby is okay to cry at. Josh Hamilton's story of redemption may be the best in history of sports. Just hearing the tale sends chills down your spine. However, back in 2008, nobody knew whether Josh Hamilton was here to stay. That changed in 2008 Home Run Derby. Hamilton launched 28 shots over Yankee Stadium in the competition's first round and got by far the greatest ovation ever received by a Yankee stadium visitor. The moment made you feel so good that anyone would shed a tear of joy just watching it live. There's a lot of emotional stuff on in this article from Bleacher Report, by the way. This is where it came from. I have to say one of my favorite sports moments ever was the series against Nashville in 2010, Game 5. Blackhawks, I should say. I should clarify. Dan, did you watch that game?
I did.
I'm telling you, I lost my mind, and we could have gone to that game. There was a conflict that my ex-wife Heather and I could have gone to the game, but we ended up not going. But we watched it at home, and this was the series was tied at 2 at this point. And it was a back and forth game throughout the game. And then with a minute left, Marian Hossa checked, I can't remember who, into the boards, but it was a pretty big and a pretty cheap hit, which is very unusual for Marian Hossa. He doesn't do that kind of stuff. And he doesn't normally play that kind of game. Also, he doesn't take dumb penalties. He was not one of those guys that took dumb penalties. With this is a crucial game. If they had lost that game, if they lose the game, they have to go to a game 6, which they must win, and in Nashville. So, This was insane. For people who don't remember, this is seriously my you know, look, when the Hawks won the cup in 2010, that was an insane moment. And of course in 2013 and 2015 when they won the cup, those were three of my favorite sports games moments ever that made me go nuts. But I got to say Game 5 Nashville 2010, it might take the cake. Seriously. I mean, they didn't win the cup, obviously. It was only the first round of the playoffs, too. But so here's what happened. There's a minute left in the game. The Hawks are down one. Okay? And Hossa does this cheap hit, gets a five-minute major, okay? Does not get a game misconduct, which is very important to the outcome of this game. If you would have got a game misconduct, that's, you get booted. You're out of the game. But he's got to spend 5 minutes in the penalty box. Okay. The minute left in the game, they throw him in the penalty box. So he's in the box. Hawks are shorthanded now. With 14 seconds left, Kaner, sick goal, scores it, ties the game. Okay. With 14 seconds left, UC goes nuts. People are going nuts. All right. So now we're going to overtime, and they do a full timeout in the playoffs. You know, when you're in the playoffs during in the NHL, you do a full timeout. Full intermission between, you know, your third and your third period and your overtime period. So during this intermission, my ex-wife and I are just like, oh my God, because now when they come back in the intermission or when they come back in the overtime, they still got 4 minutes to kill on Hossa's penalty. So they're going to be shorthanded for 4 minutes with Hossa in the box. So we come back, and you know they come back from the intermission, which took forever because everybody was so anxious. So they get it. The overtime starts. They got 4 minutes to kill, and it's the longest 4 minutes of my life. It was insane. And I'm not making this up. With about a minute left on Hossa's penalty, I said to Heather, hey, don't worry about it. And I was goofing around, obviously. I said, don't worry about it. When Hossa gets out of the box, he'll score the game-winning goal. And that's what happened. And so Hossa gets out of the box. They successfully kill off the four-minute penalty, which was unbelievable. Well, nerve-wracking. I was not sitting down. I was pacing around the apartment. And then when Hossa gets out of the box, he does. He gets the puck, scores the game-winning goal. Place goes absolutely berserk. I'm going nuts in the apartment. And that remains maybe my favorite Hawk moment. You know, besides them, I mean, obviously them winning the cup is more important in terms of, you know, the stature of it. But that's absolutely incredible. And again, it's one of those moments that you couldn't write. You know, you couldn't do it. Now, Dan, do you have one of your favorite moments like that?
Oh, well, you know, obviously, you know, any of the championships for the stature. But I remember the feeling of elation when Devin Hester ran back the opening kickoff in the Super Bowl loss.
2011?
Yeah.
No. 2007.
Yeah.
2007, yeah.
So when he did that, you know, just – we were all amped up to begin with, and the fact they kicked to him and he did that and everything he had done that season, it was just like, this could happen, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we were underdogs in the game. And so it was one of those things where, it was just kind of like, oh my God, you know, like they kicked to him. He did this, you know? And,
we were at my parents' house. Mm. Heather and I were at my parents' house watching the game, and that was incredible. It really was. I mean, the game didn't turn out
right.
But that moment,
definitely, I just remember just being gobsmacked and jaw on the floor.
Yeah. I can't believe neither of us, I mean, I can't believe I didn't mention this. You know, the Cubs won the World Series about 2.5 years ago.
Sure.
And that, I mean, what can you say about that?
A lot of tears of joy that day for a lot of people.
Yeah. Seriously, that was just ridiculous. Everybody cried. I cried. I call up my parents. My parents are crying. Everybody was just bawling, and it was incredible. One of the greatest sports moments ever in the history of sports, and especially this town. I mean, it might be the greatest sports moment in the history of this town.
Sure. With the weight attached to it.
Yeah. so that was there, and I you know, the game they won the previous Saturday, or no, sorry, the game that they won to get into the World Series, was the same night that I'll never forget it. It was a Saturday night. They win the game and they're going to the World Series, and for some reason that hit me a little bit. That almost hit me harder, you know, than when they won the World Series. It was just insane. But the fact that they were going to go to the World Series, for some reason, I don't know why, that really struck me. But it was a Saturday night, and you know, we watched the game, obviously, watched all the post game coverage and all that stuff, and that was the night that David S. Pumpkins came into our world. Tom Hanks was hosting SNL. It was the Halloween episode. And David S. Pumpkins was brought into the world. So that was a great night. Cubs went into the World Series, and David S. Pumpkins became part of our lives. But, yeah, so those were good ones, obviously. And, I mean, you know, clearly the World Series. And it erased all of the sad stuff that happened. And we can talk sad stuff. If we're going to talk, you know, and we are talking sad sports things, or sports things that make you cry, you know, the number of Cubs related moments that made you cry or were really devastating are endless. Just endless, which is why there was so much elation when the Cubs won the World Series.
Right.
I mean, I'm speaking in obvious, but all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going on either end of the spectrum and in generic stuff, like emotional stuff, like it's okay to cry at these sports moments. 312-981-7200. Which ones would you talk about? We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. I love this girl. I love Haley Steinfeld. I think she's wonderful. This is a Wild Card Wednesday. You may Wild Card Wednesday. That would be any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And that's Haley Steinfeld. Ike in Country Club Hills requested that. And that's Back to Life. And that's from Bumblebee. That's her song that's on the Bumblebee soundtrack. She performed it on Mr. Jimmy Fallon's show. And I didn't know that. I mean, I know she, because she's in the Pitch Perfect movies, and I know she can sing. I wasn't aware that she was going to like release like albums and stuff, but she is. I just think she's great. I mean, you know what? Because I mean, I loved her since True Grit. You know, when she played the little girl in True Grit, she was great in that. But it's the movie The Edge of 17. Edge of 17 is, I mean, I love her in that movie. I haven't seen Bumblebee. It was during the Christmas break, and I didn't go. I'm not high on the Transformer movies, but I really love her. And then I read the reviews, and they're good. It's like the only Transformer movie, you know, that has gotten good reviews. Like, seriously, good reviews. Oh, you know what's slick? Let me explain something before we get back to the sport. We're talking about sports moments that made you cry, either because they were horrible, or because they were great, or because they were emotional. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, so there's this movie coming out Friday, Dan, called Replicas, with my main man Keanu. And it's a science fiction movie where he clones his wife and kids because they died in a car accident, and he clones them back as clones. And obviously this is not going to be good. So this is a movie that's kind of been sitting on the shelf for a little while, and Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios company picked it up, and they're releasing it. So, and I hear it's not good. I mean, I always root for Keanu, but I hear it's not good, and it's one of those movies that had Byron Allen's company not picked it up, it would have probably gone straight to video. So, I noticed this, is really, really slick. You know how now, when you see commercials, the reason I thought of this is because on the Bumblebee, the commercials for Bumblebee, they show it's a big deal to show the Rotten Tomatoes rating. Like, if you're like, we're 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, and which, you know, Bumblebee has a very high rating from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. And so I'm watching this commercial for Replicas, and I noticed that it says 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, for this movie? And then I look, 98% want to see Not that 98% liked it, but 98% want to see it. Now, that could be six people who, you know, who went to Rotten Tomatoes and said, I'm really excited about Replicas, you know? And so, but you, the next time that if you guys are watching TV and the commercial for Replicas comes on, when they show the Rotten Tomatoes, because they show the Rotten Tomatoes logo and they really, the 98% is big, the logo is big, but the want to see part is very small and it's like stuck in the middle. And I was like, that's some pretty sneaky advertising right there. Like you think, oh, 98% of the critics like Replicas? Wow. No, it's 98% of the people who logged onto Rotten Tomatoes want to see it. I thought that was pretty funny. So they're even doing that now in the advertising. So, but anyway. Anyway, so I like, the point is I like Haley Steinfeld. I think she's great. All right, let's see. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about moments where you cry during sports, whether it because it's a great victory and you're unbelievably happy, or because it was a horrible loss or something terrible happened and it's sad, or it's emotional just because something happened with a player or there was an emotional moment on the field or whatever. 574 area code says, most disappointing sports moment as a fan of the late 70s Red Sox, Bucky Dent. Yeah. As a Bulls fan, favorite moment, Jordan with the shot. Well, he's had so many of those, though, right? I mean, there was one against, what was it, 98 was against Utah. And then Cleveland? He did it twice to Cleveland. Didn't he do it twice to Cleveland? No, that was, and then what was the game where, because I, you know, I'm a little fuzzy, because after 91, I kind of laid off on basketball. It's really funny because I was a huge Bulls fan in like the late 70s through the 80s and then in 91 when they won the championship. And then during the dynasty, I was like, whatever. I don't know why. For me, it was the moment. I'll give you another great sports moment when they swept the damn Pistons in 91. And then obviously they went on to win the championship that year, and that was awesome. But for me, the emotional pinnacle that I reached that season was when they swept the Pistons, because the damn Pistons every single year had the Bulls number up until then, and then they swept the Pistons, and I reacted better that night than when they won the championship. But what the hell was my point?
Well, it was Jordan, so it could be either the shrug game or the flu game.
The flu game. When was the flu game? Because he had like his numbers were ridiculous that night, right? And he was like in 102 fever, and he was sitting on the. He had towels over his head when he was sitting on the side.
It was also against the Jazz. He scored 38 points that.
I don't think Michael Jordan's a human being. I really don't. He had like a horrible fever. He was dehydrated. You know, and when you're sick and you're dehydrated, the last thing you should do is do something incredibly strenuous and athletic. And he scores 38 points. Aaron in Wheaton said, there's a NASCAR upset. If the caution wasn't thrown, Kevin Harvick would have won it. I know WGN doesn't talk NASCAR too much, but maybe your truck driver listeners could relate. Yeah, I don't watch NASCAR. That's not my thing. I've seen Talladega Nights. Is Talladega Nights about NASCAR or is it about the other one?
No, it's NASCAR.
It's NASCAR, right? Yeah. What's the other one? It's NASCAR and what's
Formula One.
Oh, Formula One. Oh, yeah, that's different. NASCAR is, yeah, so Talladega Nights is about NASCAR. That's the most I know about NASCAR. Ricky Bobby. He's my favorite NASCAR driver. Shake and bake, baby. 630 area code says, the Hawks losing to the Kings to go to the Stanley Cup final. Yeah. Yeah. Scott said, my bad sports loss would have to be Dale Earnhardt dying on the last, the late of the 2001 Daytona 500, one of the worst days in NASCAR history. Yeah, that's actually mentioned in this article that we're talking about. That's horrible. That is horrible. How about this? John Starks coughs up the 1994 NBA Finals. So, the Bulls didn't win that year? Was that the only year they didn't win?
I believe that was the 2 year period where they
didn't.
Right.
Because there was because they won in 92, 93, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't win 94, 95, and then 96, 97, 98. Yeah, that's it. That's right.
And if I believe correctly, that was the infamous phantom call on Scottie Pippen that allowed the Knicks to go to the finals.
Got it. The New York Knicks were on the brink of ending their 21-year titleless drought back in 1994. And to New York sports fans, that's an eternity. Yeah, thank you, New York sports fans. It's an eternity. 21 years is an eternity? Try 108. They went into Game 7 of the 94 NBA Finals against Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets in what was sure to be a great game, and it was, but it fell the way of the Rockets. The reason is John Starks. Starks, who was otherwise worshipped by New York sports fans, did not provide the output that the Knicks had come to expect from him. He was historically bad that night and cost the Knicks the title. So, poor guy. All right, we got a break and more sports moments that made you cry, whether it was out of joy or sadness or just emotion. 312-981-7200. The news is next. There's our first TV TV theme that we always get multiple TV theme requests on Wildcard Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, wild. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Lake Geneva Dan requesting the Alfred Hitchcock Presents theme. So there you go. We are talking about sports moments that made you cry or sports events that made you cry, whether because it was so bad and heartbreaking and it was a loss, or it was so great, like the Cubs winning the World Series, that it made you cry, or it was just emotional. There were personal stories about the athletes or the situation that made you cry. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, here's one of the Michael Jordan moments that we're talking about here. This is the series-clinching shot in 1998 NBA Finals. Everybody in the world knew that 1998 would be Michael Jordan's final NBA season, but nobody knew how he would end his career. However, one thing is for sure, he still had it. As the game clock started to tick below 20 seconds, the Bulls trailed the Utah Jazz 86-85. Then Michael Jordan did what he had been doing his entire career. He robbed Karl Malone. Malone seemed destined for a post-move score that would have made it a three-point game until MJ came around the edge and stripped the ball from his grasp. He then calmly dribbled down the court as the clock began to tick down smaller and smaller, 12, 11, 10, and then he took off. He sprinted for Byron Russell's outside, and he seemed sure to drive to the hoop until he cut back on a perfect crossover, as anybody had ever seen, stepped back and shot a fadeaway jumper that has since lived in infamy. It was unbelievable. That was Jordan's last shot, and everyone knew it. Let's pretend that those years in Washington never happened. Michael Jordan was a living legend, and the way he ended his career is the way anyone would have wanted him to, and it was remarkable. Gary Anderson's 38-yard miss in the 1998 NFC Championship game. This may not have been as perfect. An offense as the 1998 Minnesota Vikings. They set the single season record and finished the season 15-1. They were destined to give the Vikings their first Super Bowl in franchise history, and they seemed to face no challenge in the NFC Championship game against the Atlanta Falcons. Fast forward to the fourth quarter, 2 minutes and 7 seconds remain in the game. Minnesota leads Atlanta 27-20, and are on the Falcons' 20-yard line, setting up a 38-yard chip shot for Gary Anderson, who had not missed a kick all season. Sure enough, Anderson hooks it, and the Falcons get the ball, score a touchdown, and win in overtime, leaving the Vikings with arguably the greatest team to never win a Super Bowl. Did you watch that series, Dan, back then?
No, I did not catch that one, but it is legendary. You know, anytime you have a character from Minnesota from TV or movies, somehow that gets integrated into that person's life. Like, I've seen that in multiple different arenas, that storyline woven into, if they're from Minnesota.
Oh, man.
And there's a football element that is somehow...
That's brought in.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. The 1994 Rangers Stanley Cup celebration. Back in 1994, the Rangers were in the midst of a 54-year championship drought. Keep in mind, these Rangers played in New York, which made it equivalent to a 254-year drought. Sure enough, the Rangers shocked the world on the back of Mark Messier. And wouldn't you know it, Stéphane Matteau. When the waiting was finally over, the Rangers shared an emotional moment with the Madison Square Garden crowd, and there had never been there was never as loud as it was that night. All right. How about this? Brett Favre's first retirement. How many times did Brett Favre retire?
I believe it was three when he finally called it. One was kind of like a mini one, but
yeah. I know it sounds stupid now, but no fan base in the history of sports was ever as attached to a player as the Green Bay Packers were to Brett Favre. Hey, Dan, do you remember back at Trib Tower when GN was at the Trib and we were still on the first floor before, you know, we moved upstairs to the seventh? You know, the men's room that was on the first floor, in the middle of the offices. There was a ladies' room and a men's room right there, right outside the conference room. So we had a conference room like in the middle of the offices downstairs. This is where on the first floor, and in that men's room, do you know how they have not urinal cakes, but they have the strainer in the bottom of the urinal? Do you remember what that one was downstairs?
I know. Yes, I don't remember the details, but I remember smiling when I saw it.
It was a Brett Favre urinal strainer. So it, essentially, when guys used the urinal, they were peeing on Brett Favre. Do you know who brought that in?
Who was that?
Cap. Cap brought that in, and it was in that urinal for years too. It was a few years it was in there. But yeah, I mean, the first time I saw it, I thought it was hilarious. And of course, Cap brought it in. Dave Kaplan brought it in and put it in the urinal. So essentially, every time any male employee at WGN used that urinal, they were peeing on Brett Favre.
I can see him, imagine him buying it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
this
yeah.
This is flat out phenomenal.
I think he said that every time he peed, too. This is flat-out phenomenal while he's peeing on Brett Favre. All of this peeing on Brett Favre stuff, this is going to end up on the show on Friday. There's no question about it. They loved the Green Bay Packers. Well, I mean, they did love Brett Favre. There's no question. But seriously, and I know that we had a urinal thing, you know, and we peed on him. What's not to love about the guy? The guy was unbelievable. Brett Favre was unbelievable. That's another thing that the Packers have had a history of, like ridiculous quarterbacks. That's that. I mean, how many ridiculous quarterbacks have they had, Dan?
Several. I mean, there was that hilarious thing they did on the Bears game when they played recently, where they showed all of the Bears quarterbacks since Brett Favre started his first game. And so, like, the left side of the screen was three: Brett Favre, Deshaun Kaiser, and Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. And there was like 27 names on the Bears quarterbacks.
That's pretty funny. And to have him walk away after a 13-3 season, which featured them one overtime from the Super Bowl, had all of the Cheesehead universe, they were in mourning. Literally, several Green Bay stores were closed because of Favre's decision, and every soul in Green Bay was crying. They closed stores because Favre was going to retire? How about Mike Piazza hits the first home run after 9/11? The nation was in depression after 9/11, but when Mike Piazza unloaded on an eighth-inning pitch to put the Mets ahead 2-1 in the first baseball game since 9/11, strangers hugged each other in the aisles, and for a moment everything was okay. It was a tear-jerking moment that I will, for one, never forget, this author says. Yeah. Some texts are coming in. 312-981-7200, and we want to hear from you guys. Brian says, both my father and grandfather were diehard Blackhawks and Cubs fans. My grandfather passed away at the start of the Stanley Cup Finals. Oh, man, in 2010. My father passed away at the start of the Finals in 2015. Both of those series were very emotional at the end and during. Then the Cubs win the World Series in 2016 to top it off. On the positive side, I was down at the Cubby Bear in Wrigleyville for the 2013 Cup against Boston. What an atmosphere. Yeah, that was weird for me. You know the story. You know the story, Dan.
Yeah.
I was at the main stage in Evanston. That's where I saw them get the cup in 2013 with nobody that I knew. There were a couple of people because I hosted this Spelling Bee theater benefit for Lifeline Theater. And I had committed to it long before, you know, I committed to it long before I knew that either the Hawks were going to be in the finals or there was going to be a game scheduled that night. And there was, of course, and you know, so I was at this bar in Evanston, not at Ricochet's with all my friends, where I watched all the games. And, you know, many of the patrons that I hung out with Ricochet's, we would go down to the UC and see the games together. That's where I should have been. I didn't want to leave because I didn't want to miss any of the game. You know, a cab ride from Evanston to Lincoln Square, it's longer. That's like a 15-minute cab ride right there easily. And I didn't want to miss any of the game. I didn't want to listen to it on the radio. I wanted to watch it. I didn't want to listen to it in a cab. You know what I mean? On the radio. They get the cup and I'm in a cab. So I decided to stay there and witness the whole, you know, I mean, it was great because it was the game was on the 13 seconds was ridiculous. The two goals in 13 seconds was absolutely ridiculous. And you ended up. What's crazy about it, and you know this, Dan, is like if you're in a room full of strangers and you're all like fans of the team or right. whatever, you immediately bond.
Yep.
And like we were all best friends after the game. So I stayed there for a little while and watched a little bit of the post show, and then I made my way to Ricochet's and celebrated with my real friends. But that I never thought I would say. Wait, where were you when they clinched the 2013? Where were you when they clinched the 2013? Do you remember?
13,
that was the shortened season.
Yeah, that was the shortened season. I was watching at home with my dad. So, yeah, that one we were at.
That
home.
Was where they started out undefeated for like 5 months, for
right,
like five
right,
weeks.
Right.
That was an incredible season. It was a shortened season. We didn't think it was going to, I didn't think that season was going to happen. I really didn't think it was going to happen. But it was amazing. 2010, when they won the cup, I was at Simon's. 2015, I was not feeling well. I was at home. I was laying on my couch watching it. So, let's see. Greg says the 1991 All-Star Game, NHL All-Star Game at Chicago Stadium in the National Anthem. Yeah. No, that people have strong memories. For people who might not know, when the NHL All-Star Game took place, we had just started. The original Gulf War just started. Operation Desert Storm. Yes, Desert Storm was the original one. So, because what Shock and Awe was the second one, right? Okay, so 1991, it was Desert Storm. And it had just started. And this was one of the first big events after it had started. And first of all, the national anthem at the Chicago Stadium already was, you know, legendary at that point. And apparently, you could feel the whole barn shake. Jay says, I cried with elation when the Sox took the World Series in 2005 and witnessed the ticker tape parade trophy at Halstead and Van Buren. Big moment for Sox fans, obviously. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Why don't we take a quick break here, and we'll come back, and I want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Moments in sports that made you cry because you were so happy, you were sad, or it was just emotional and there was a great backstory to it. 312-981-7200. More after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday! That means you can get wild with cards on a Wednesday. No, it means that you can call up and request a song, any artist, anything. It's wild. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Paul requesting Eric Clapton with Promises. And again, you can use that number, 312-981-7200, to join us. We're talking about sports moments and sports and games and stuff like that that made you cry, either through elation or sadness or because there was an emotional backstory to it. 312-981-7200. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Grzanich is coming up at 5 o'clock and coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hey, Dan, I just thought of a moment where my friends and I all got teary-eyed. Opening day at Wrigley Field, 1998. It was the start of the season, the first season without Harry in the booth. He had died during right before spring training. He passed away right before spring training in 1998, and they did this really wonderful tribute to Harry. Right before the game, they did this really wonderful. They released balloons and they did all kinds of really cool stuff. And I cried when Ron Santo died. When Ron Santo passed away, that was a big one, a real big one. I found out listening to Steve and Johnny. That's where you working then?
I was.
That was 2010.
Yeah.
It was December 2000. It's like December 10th or something like that of 2010. And I was listening to Steve and Johnny. I was in a very weird situation at that time. I was cohabitating with my wife, and we were not. I had one room, and she had the rest of the place, and I was in that room just laying on the bed. Listening to Steve and Johnny, and at that there was a period of time there because we cohabitated for about 5 months like that before I found an apartment and moved out, and so I spent a lot of time in that room drinking whiskey. So that's what I was doing. That's what I was doing that night. I was listening to Steve and Johnny and drinking whiskey. So of course I was extra emotional, you know. But no, they did a really beautiful job though at Wrigley with. Handling, you know, the first and that season turned out to be so great. 1998, that was a really great season. And everybody was like, "We're going to win this for Harry, you know, in honor Harry, we're going to win this." And then Brant Brown dropped the ball, but that wasn't really that, because there was a very exciting one-off game against the Giants and all that stuff. But that was a great season. That was a really fun season of ball at Wrigley. So many characters on that team. That was great. You know what else was great? 89. 89 was great because Don Zimmer was a lunatic, and I love the boys of Zimmer. That was a fantastic team, and Don Zimmer nuts. I love Don Zimmer. I love them. What was the series? There's a series against Boston. Oh my God! Why am I blanking on the pitcher's name who threw
Pedro Martinez?
Yeah, Martinez threw him across. Zimmer was a nut. He was, man. Go Popeye. Yeah, but that 98 season was fun. That was fun. I will say, though, I mean, we're talking about the highs and lows of that season. Brant Brown, man. I mean, I was at that damn game. I mean, do we have the... I think I have the sound bite of Ron.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about sadness, his just... obviously he wasn't crying, but if you could encapsulate crying and sadness in a groan, it is
the call is, you know, it was funny, he was talking about this, you know, like when it happened, after it happened. I can't see if we've got it or not. I think it would be under B for Brant Brown, right?
It looked like all your Rons were in one spot though.
Oh, Ron Cooper, that's him talking about Cooper. I'm talking about Andy, me. Yay. No. I thought it was under... I thought we used to have it under Brant Brown. But I don't see it. So, anyway. I don't think we have it. I don't know. So, anyway, if we find it, I'll play it. But this, you know, it's not the most pleasant thing to hear. Because, I mean, and you're absolutely right. The sadness in his voice. I mean, that call. And he was talking about... How, you know, after it happened, people were interviewing him. You know, they wanted to get his thoughts on it because obviously, you know, Ron Santo was the biggest Cub fan that ever lived, you know. And he was like, oh, I'm talking to this guy. He was complaining. He was complaining to Pat that he was being interviewed. And they kept playing your call over and over again. Because if you hear the, you know, because it's Pat doing the call, he dropped a ball! He dropped a ball! And then in the background, you just hear Ron going, no! Oh, no! That's one of those moments, man. And my friends and I, we were like, yeah, man, when we get out of here, we're going to the Brat Stop. You know, it was one of those deals which was like, this is fantastic. We're going to go to the Brat Stop. We're going to celebrate, and it's going to be great. And we just drove home sad. Went straight from Milwaukee and went right to Simon's. Terrible. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. In 2016, my answering machine even said, the Cubs are going to win the World Series. You know, I said, and I hope it's in my lifetime. Of course, I was only 84 then, you know. So anyway, that's my message. And I'm standing here in a Cubs shirt right now. And I saw the entire World Series on a small hospital television set. My friend Betty had double bypass surgery. So I saw the entire series there. On the final game, it's after 10 o'clock, there's a rain delay. And I said, Betty, I can't stay. I said, this could go on for hours. On the way home, they're taking a tarp off. Guess what? When I got home, I got to see the winning hit on a big screen.
There you go. That's great. That's a great story.
You imagine that?
Yeah, nobody's...
But that's not memorable, I'll tell you.
Well, everybody in Chicago, I should say, is going to remember where they were that night. I mean, it's going to be, Andy Mazur passed out. Andy Mazur was in the studio on the 7th floor over at Trib Tower. They were going to do post-game, and he passed out. He fell out of the chair. So, Jim, that's a great story. That is a great story. I remember watching that game, Dan, when the rain delay started, I couldn't believe it. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Now there's a rain delay? And then we were on right after. We talked about it all night, all morning, I should say, all morning long. Yeah, that was a fun night. Let's see, what do we got here? Canadian Bill says, I have four. Brett Favre's game a day after his dad died. Oh, yeah, the game after his dad died. Saku Loivu and Mario Lemieux comeback, all their comebacks after cancer. The day the Montreal Expos left town, but they will be back within 10 years. You know why I miss the Expos? Yeah. If you grew up in Chicago, you know what we were just listening to. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. And that, of course, was the Garfield Goose and Friends theme. And Tom requested that. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 Live. That's what I'm seeing. I'm telling you, Dan. This is around the hour
about 23 minutes early.
When the lack of sleep starts, I don't even know what the hell radio station I'm on. For those people who don't know, I get a little loopy when the morning after one of my film club screenings, and we had a screening of Slapshot, because I don't go home. I come straight here after that, and then sometimes I try to get some sleep before the screening, and I didn't, and so sometimes I get a little bit nuts. So, and we're at that moment there where where it gets a little crazy. Anyway, we're back here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Steve Rzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is a Wednesday morning, and that means it's Wild Card Wednesday. You're being Wild Card Wednesday. You can get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We are talking about sports moments that make you cry, games or whatever, sports things that made you cry, whether it be in elation or in sadness or there is an emotional backstory to what has happened. Vic, do you have any sports moments that made you really, really happy or really, really sad?
Yeah, there was one. I don't remember the exact year. I know it was in the 80s, and it was right when the Cowboys they went on a really bad run. I want to say it lasted nearly a decade where they just weren't any good. The 49ers beat the Cowboys. I think it may have been a NFC championship. It was a big game right at the end of the season. May have been the championship game. I'm not sure. But anyway, the 49ers beat the Cowboys. I was a Dallas fan at the time because my dad was Cowboys from Texas, and I was just raised to be a Cowboys fan.
Sure.
But I literally cried. I was a boy, though.
Yeah.
But I literally cried. And I was in my uncle's house watching it, which we lived right outside the Oakland area. And they were all 49ers fans.
Oh,
so,
God.
So they thought it was, they got a little tickled at the fact that I was crying.
Oh, man.
So that stuck with me.
Yeah, I could see why.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You watched that game outside of Oakland?
I did.
With a bunch of 49ers fans. Terrible.
Cowboys jersey on. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Oh, man.
You know, it's funny. I just went out there to the Bay Area not too long ago and visited with my aunt. My uncle has since passed, but my aunt and a bunch of my family out there, all 49ers fans and even a few Packers fans. No Bears fans. But that came up in the hospital room.
Did it really?
It did. Oh, I remember you crying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good old Auntie M.
Even all of these years later,
yeah,
they bring it up to make to give you a hard time.
Isn't that funny? How,
oh man, that's
how we put so much importance on sport. I remember it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I can understand. I've gotten emotional over sports in the past.
Sure,
no question about it. No question.
Ginny and I never get emotional about sports. Her being a Packers fan and I'm a Bears fan. There's no problems
at
all there.
Sure. I bet. And she a Brewers fan too?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. All right. Oh, that would. Oh, God.
And I know
that must
how to
have
pick
been.
Them.
That must have been a tough one-off game for you then. This past season.
Yeah. She is not a big talker though. She's pretty kind.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be really. You know, people can be real jerks about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And like get in your face and things like that.
Now I get that when I go to visit her family in Racine, Wisconsin. I get prodded quite a bit.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, now that the Bears are better, they were very quiet this season.
Oh, I bet they
didn't hear much from them.
Didn't hear. Oh, man. All right. 312-981-7200. You know, there's another thing. Really quickly, in order to make good moments, there are also like some weird superstitions that a lot of sports players and sports fans have. One of my favorites was it was during the 2010 run that the Hawks had. In the 2010 run, it was during the playoffs, and I can't remember exactly what game or what round it was, but we were watching it at my friend Benji's house, and he had a giant screen TV, so there were like 11 of us there, and well, more than a lot. I think it was like 15, 20 people in this apartment. And this apartment, by the way, was right. It was my friend Benji and Britton. They both lived there, and it was an apartment above the Davis Theater, and so it always smelled like hot buttered popcorn. Like the apartment smelled like hot buttered popcorn. So it was like intoxicating to stay in that apartment, especially in the hallway when you were going down the stairs, because the stairway, the entrance to the apartment was right next to the marquee, like right next to the entrance of the Davis. So as you're walking in and you walk up, all you smell is popcorn. So anyway, we're all watching the game, and we're all like sitting in the same spot that we sat the game before. People were standing exactly where they were standing the game before, and the Hawks were down. Were down one, and one of the guys went into the bathroom. And the Hawks scored while he was in the bathroom, and we made him stay in the bathroom because they scored while he was in the bathroom. Like you can't, and he didn't. Well, there was a small TV in the bathroom, so he's like, you can watch the TV in there. If you need a beer, somebody will bring it to you, but you're not leaving that bathroom. They did win the game. They won the game, but he stayed. We made him. I'm not kidding. We made him stay in the bathroom.
Did you give him some credit at least?
For, oh yeah, no, yeah.
That's a fan, right?
But that's the thing. But that's the thing though, because that's how stupid, you know, like superstitions are. Like when you're watching games, you have to stand in the same spot and have the same. We had in the 2003 when the Cubs had the run in 2003. I watched most of those games at Simon's, and there was a can of Old Style that someone had brought. It was Chris Anderson who will be joining us next week to talk about the Warren Zevon gig, the birthday party for Warren Zevon. He had like a can of Old Style. I can't remember the backstory, the real long backstory behind it. But this can of Old Style, I think he or somebody was about to open it, and somebody hit a home run, and they were like, don't open the Old Style. And that can of Old Style, they had just gotten this can of Old Style out. Something great happened. I don't know the whole backstory. So this can of Old Style, Chris would bring it to the bar, this can of Old Style, and we'd pass it around the bar, and people would rub it during the during the games. You know, people would just pass it around and rub it and for good luck. You got, he had to rub the old style can for good luck. Mm-hmm. Didn't help because he brought it there the night of the Bartman game. So it didn't have its psychic powers that night.
There's a reason they call us fanatics.
Yeah. It's so stupid. Go back in get back in the bathroom now. And he did it too, you know, because we were not kidding around. We're like, no, you can't come out here and watch the game with us now. They scored while you were in the can. That means you got to stay in the can. And he's like, all right, I guess I understand. That's how stupid all of this is. This guy who we made stay in the bathroom was like, yeah, no, that makes sense to me. That totally makes sense. I should watch the rest of the game in this bathroom. And they had two bathrooms, so people were using the other bathroom. They were using the bathroom upstairs. He was in the downstairs bathroom. So we were like, he can't leave the bathroom unless you want to go in there and pee next to the guy. He's not going to leave the bathroom. They won the game though. So anyway, I wonder whatever happened to that can of old style. I think we probably whipped it against the wall or something with it. I think we destroyed it. I would imagine. Oh man, Tim. Send it in a text. We're talking about sports moments that make you cry because of sadness or happiness or an emotional story involved. Tim says, I don't know about one of the greatest or worst sports moments, but Hulk Hogan full body slamming Andre the Giant was a bit shocking. I think Hulk Hogan understood the gravity of that moment when he did it. You see the gravity of that moment? You see how he put that in?
All right.
I will say this. That was pretty damn impressive. I mean, if you can full body slam Andre the Giant, that's pretty impressive. 815 area code, the death of Dan Weldon, who is an Indy 500 champ. 815 area code says the Olympics with the miracle on. Oh my God, the miracle on ice! How did that not come up already? And at the screening last night of Slapshot, we talked about the movie Miracle because we started talking about other hockey movies. And so, of course, Miracle came up because Miracle is one of the greatest hockey movies of all time. You know why? Because Kurt Russell's in it. Yeah, one of the greatest moments in sports, the Miracle on Ice, 1980 Olympics. Incredible. 708 area code says the 1996 Masters, Greg Norman was six strokes ahead going into Sunday, and he lost to Nick Faldo by five strokes. I've never gotten emotional over golf. Now, miniature golf, that's a whole nother thing. If my putt doesn't go across the bridge over the water, you know, or if I can't get past the windmill, I get sad. I get real, real sad. Brian in Montana says the 85 Bears in the Super Bowl watching Walter Payton on the sidelines with his head in his hands after not scoring a touchdown. Have people forgiven Ditka for giving the ball to Fridge? Do you think people have forgiven Ditka for that?
Yeah.
I mean, they won the Super Bowl, so...
He's such a larger-than-life figure at this point. And obviously, time heals all wounds. But I think it is one of those things where it's always just kind of...
I was mad. I mean, I watched the game. I followed that series, but... Peyton didn't score a touchdown in that series, did he? In that game, he didn't score a touchdown, and so he gave the ball to the Fridge,
right?
And that's, but again, they won, so you know, I guess all is forgiven. I remember my dad being furious about that, really mad. So, all right, 312-981-7200. Go stand in the bathroom. So stupid. Let's take a break here on WGN. More sports moments that made you cry, either because you were happy or you're sad or they were emotional in some regard. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything. Larry requesting The Cure, Just Like Heaven. And we are back. By the way, Dan, you know, we had dinner at the Murray the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant before the screening of Slapshot last night, and the food was great, and it was really a lot of fun. And I don't know if they, you know, if they knew that I would be pleased with this, but they had the 80s, you know, the 80s music station on, or whatever, the channel, you know, and they were playing jams. Like, the whole time we were there, like, some of my favorite 80s music, like, back to back to back to back to back, I was happy. I mean, they played The Fix, they played the Thompson Twins. It was fantastic. So, Duran Duran. Great. We are talking about sport moments or sports that made you cry because it was either a great moment or a sad moment. And let's see. We've got more of these moments here. 312-981-7200. How about this? Cal Ripken Jr. takes a lap. Ripken went out there every day and played without complaining and had a respect for the Orioles fan base like nothing I'd ever seen before in my life. So when he finally broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive games streak record, they would not stop cheering. After five innings had passed, he went out for a curtain call and then took his place in the dugout. However, he was forced to come back when the Baltimore crowd would not stop cheering. They went on and on and on and on and on, eventually forcing Cal to take a lap around the stadium. It was an extremely touching moment. Hey, you know, I got to interview Cal Ripken Jr.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was filling in for Cochran, and he came in studio. First of all, he's a massive guy. He's a big dude. I'm not a big dude. I'm 5'8". You know, I'm a little weasel. But I mean, I had no idea he was that big. And one of the nicest athletes I've ever met. Really, really good guy. But I remember one of my friends used to make fun of Cal Ripken because it was like, because he has the best attendance record? Well, I mean, what? But that, you know, that's impressive to play, you know, that. I mean, first of all, you're playing a sport every single game. There's a risk of you getting hurt. And it wasn't like he was bad. It wasn't like he played every day and he sucked. He played every day and he was good. But like I had friends who totally made fun of that record. So who cares about that record? It's because, you know, when you were in school, did they give you a prize for, like, did you get, like, anything for best attendance?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I did, too. I got Sox tickets. They used to give us Sox. What did you get? Do you remember?
Yeah, we also received it was back when the Cubs Sox game was the exhibition game. We got tickets to that.
Yeah, we would get Sox tickets, which, of course, I was disappointed about because lived 6 blocks away from Wrigley Field, and the school I went to was 4 blocks away from Wrigley Field. So it was a little like, why are you giving me Sox tickets? One, it's really hard to get to Comiskey if you're like 12. Two, I could walk to Wrigley. Three, I don't like the Sox. But yeah, that was our reward for most attendance or best attendance. And I would never get any kind of other, like, I never got any kind of academic award. You know what I mean? So, it's a, see, like, except, unlike Cal Ripken, I would show up every day and not be good. That was the difference between Cal Ripken and I. Did I ever tell you the story when we that my friends and I went on that epic baseball trip back in 1992?
Right.
We stopped in a bunch of places, including Baltimore, and it was the year that Camden Yards opened up. It was the very first year, and it was an incredible stadium. So, you know that Babe Ruth's house, where he was born and where he grew up, is in Baltimore. And so did I tell you this?
No.
So we went to a lot of places. I mean, when we got to Baltimore, the first thing we did was we had to go to the stadium to either scalp tickets, because, no, you couldn't get tickets. It was, you know, the very first season of Camden Yards. It was a brand new park. So we had to get tickets off the street. So we got our tickets, put the tickets away, and then I, of course, insisted that we had to go to any place that Edgar Allan Poe had ever been. And we went to his grave and all that stuff, which is in a really, really seedy part of town. Let me just say that. If you're gonna visit Baltimore, and you want to go to Poe's grave, go. I suggest going with a group and going in the day. That's my suggestion, because it's a pretty seedy part of town. And it's cool, though. I mean, I highly suggest that you go, because it's awesome, especially if you're a Poe if you're a Poe fan. So, and then we're like, hey, Babe Ruth's house is not very, you know, let's go to Babe Ruth's house. So we go to Babe Ruth's house, and this is like the house he was born in. Like, they actually have, you know, like the bedroom that he was born in the house. The bedroom that he was born in had like a velvet rope in front of it, so you couldn't go in, and it had like the furniture. I don't know, it was probably replica furniture, obviously, or something. So you can walk through the house, and it had little parts, you know, little plaques up on the wall. But one thing that we were like astonished by, like, this is Babe Ruth's house. This is where the Babe was born. Okay. You know, one of the greatest baseball players in the history of the sport, and acknowledged by everybody to be that. And the living room on the first floor, when you walk in, and I don't know if it's still like this or not, had a gigantic display case that took up a wall and a half, like a glass shadow box display case, filled with nothing but Cal Ripken stuff. Pictures and jerseys and all kinds of stuff. And then if you walked up to the, I'll never forget this, if you and I, when I walked in, I'm like, when did Cal Ripken move into Babe Ruth's house? How is this legal? Is Cal Ripken allowed to take up half of the room in Babe Ruth's house? And then on top of this whole display shadow box case filled with pictures and memorabilia and stuff, you could press a button. It was like, one of the things that you could press a button, and it played Nobody Does It Better. They played like three verses of Nobody Does It Better. And while we were in Babe Ruth's house, like walking around, you heard Nobody Does It, because people kept pressing the button. I can't imagine being an employee at Babe, you know, like a security guard or something, who has to stand in Babe Ruth's house and listen to Nobody Does It Better 5,000 times a day. I just thought that was weird. I was like, what's all this Cal Ripken stuff doing here? It doesn't make, there's no connection, except that Cal Ripken was, you know, at that time, 1992, you know, he was Cal Ripken. But still, it's Babe Ruth's house, man. Move out. Take Carly Simon with you. It was still cool, though. All right. I can't remember who they played, The Orioles destroy. I can't remember who they played, but it was Oakland. It was Oakland, and they destroyed him. I remember they destroyed him. So, all right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got the news coming up, and then more sports stories that make you cry. Right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back on 720 WGN. Nick DeGilio here. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, big wildcard Wendy. And that was 309 area code requesting Captain and Tennille with Going Bananas. Wow. I don't believe that was as big a hit as Muskrat Love. So, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're talking about sports moments or games that made you cry. Maybe because they were bad and they were heartbreaking and sad, and or maybe because they were great and inspiring, or maybe just because they were very emotional. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. So there you go. This all started. We talked with Kevin Powell earlier in the show, and of course we talked about the outcome of the Bear game on Sunday evening. And so that, of course, got us started on like horrible, bad endings to sporting events. But that we opened it up to just events that made you cry. So we were just talking about Cal Ripken Jr. when he broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak record. He had to come out for a curtain call and run around, and everybody went nuts. And so there was that. And now, how about this one? The Edmonton Oilers trade Wayne Gretzky. The writer here for who wrote this article says, I can assure you that when Gretzky was traded, he wasn't the only man in Edmonton crying. You know, it's interesting about him being traded from Edmonton, which was of course a shock. Nobody thought that he would ever, you know, leave Edmonton. And then suddenly, like, this kind of Yoko Ono scenario happened that people started to talk about. And of course, you know, Yoko Ono, there's this, you know, theory that, like, she basically broke up the Beatles and it was her fault. She, like, basically took John away from the Beatles. I don't buy any of that, by the way. I don't believe that at all. But then they started doing, like, a variation on it. When Gretzky got, I remember this specifically, I remember this big time. When Gretzky got traded to the Kings, I vividly remember Edmonton fans blaming Janet Jones, who is still his wife. And Janet Jones, he started dating Janet Jones, who was an actress and a model who lived in L.A. and was from L.A. And so they blamed her. She took it on the chin big time for Gretzky getting traded. And so that's who she took the blame. I just remember people yelling and screaming and hating Janet Jones because Janet Jones is responsible for Wayne Gretzky, the greatest hockey player of all time, leaving Edmonton. And on top of that, not just leaving Edmonton, but moving to America. And not just that, but moving to L.A., which is a climate that a lot of Canadians think shouldn't have a hockey team. So, and so this was a real big deal. And Janet Jones, by the way, who, if you guys don't remember Janet Jones, I mean, besides being Wayne Gretzky's wife, she was in some movies, and she was in, you know, she did a lot of modeling and stuff. And she was in a movie called American Anthem, which is a terrible movie. But she Janet Jones is as far as I'm concerned, one of the quintessential 80s babes. Like, if you go back, you know, and look at if they were to compile a list of the most quintessential 80s babes, Janet Jones would be either at the top or very, very near the top of 80s babes. And she was in this movie, American Anthem, which is a terrible movie. It's about gymnastics. Mitch Gaylord was the lead in it, and it was Albert Magnoli who directed Purple Rain. It was like his follow-up to Purple Rain, and it's an absurd movie, but Janet Jones is stunningly hot in it, like ridiculously hot. And so for those of us who are not from Canada or from Edmonton, we were like, I totally understand why this dude moved. I completely understand why he moved from Edmonton to L.A. I would move too if this was the woman that I would gain for leaving. So anyway, that was a big deal. It was a big deal, and a lot of people blame Janet Jones. So, but she was, oh my God, an 80s babe. All right, let's see. Here are some more big moments where people cried because of sports. And the Red Sox reversed the curse. 2004 seemed no different than any other year. The Red Sox and Yankees, arguably the best teams, two best teams in baseball, locked up in the 2004 ALCS, where the Yankees were sure to advance to the Fall Classic once again. They jumped out to a 3-0 lead in the series, and it seemed to be all over but the crying, until the Red Sox forged the greatest comeback in baseball history as they reversed the curse of the Bambino, which had plagued them for 86 years. They won four straight and shocked the Yankees. Red Sox fans were partying like they were on top of the world. It was finally over. After 86 years, the Sox finally beat the Yankees. Red Sox fans shed tears of joy, while Yankee fans shed tears of disbelief and sorrow. Now, I have to say, I remember I had directed a show during that series at the factory. I'd just finished directing a show, or it was running, and we had two huge Red Sox fans in that show, like massive Red Sox fans. And I remember, you know, if we had a rehearsal or there was a performance, we would go and we would watch the show, and we would watch it at Chief O'Neill's. This was when the Factory Theater was over on Elston, and we would go across the street, so we would watch the games at Chief O'Neill. And I remember these people going nuts that when they came back from a 3-0 deficit and they won four games in a row, and it was against the Yankees. Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was huge. So let's see what else we got here. The Cowboys lost the game by 4 points. This is the thing. Maybe this is a different one that we're talking about. I know that Vic was a Cowboys fan until he moved here. Jackie Smith's drop touchdown pass in Super Bowl eight. The scene was Super Bowl 13. The scene was Super Bowl 13. The Dallas Cowboys trailed the Pittsburgh Steelers 21-14 in the third quarter. On third down, Cowboys quarterback spotted reverse tight end Jackie Smith wide open in the end zone for what should have been an easy 10-yard touchdown pass, but Smith dropped the pass, which hit him right in the hands, and the Cowboys were forced to settle for a field goal, which cut the deficit to 4, and the Cowboys lost the game by 4 points. You know, my buddy Joe, who I've talked about many times, my late pal Joe, who I've talked about many times on the show, he's the guy. Hey, listen, he used to always say, like, anytime we watched football together, when a bunch of us would get together and watch a game on a Sunday or something, anytime somebody would miss a pass, Joe would say this. Anytime somebody missed a pass, and even if it wasn't an easy pass. You know, like this pass that we're talking about here, it hit him right in the hands, and, you know, there's no excuse. But Joe used to always say this, even if a guy dives for it and it hits his hands at some point, Joe would always say, hey, listen, if you can touch it, you can catch it. That he said it every time somebody dropped a pass, every time. Even if, like I said, even if it wasn't an easy pass, hey, if you can touch it, you can catch it. I remember we were watching a game one time. Scott was there, and it was Joe, and you know the whole group of us were sitting on the couch. We're watching the game, and Scott Oaken, my friend, says, I can't stand handsome quarterbacks. I just can't stand them. They make me nuts. And so they were bringing a backup. I can't remember what game it was, but they were bringing they knocked out the starting quarterback. So they're bringing in another quarterback. It was a Bear game, and it was Bears were playing somebody else, and I don't remember what it was. And the Bears knocked out their starting quarterback. And so they're bringing in the backup quarterback. And Scott had made this statement many times, you know, like, I can't stand good-looking quarterbacks. I can't stand handsome quarterbacks. They make me crazy. So when they're bringing in the other team is bringing in the new quarterback, Joe goes, oh, man, you're going to hate this friggin' guy. He's gorgeous. and we still say that stuff, too. Like, you know, like, we'll during games, I don't watch a lot of football with my friends anymore, but during games, like, this will get texted to our inner circle. Like, if someone drops a pass, if you can touch it, you can catch it. We text to each other, you know, or if a good-looking quarterback is playing, well, you're going to hate this guy. He's friggin' gorgeous. Only Joe didn't say friggin'. Oh, you're going to hate this guy. He's friggin' gorgeous. Oh, man. So many great Joe stories, man. The celebrity encounters are still the best ones. The Al Jorgensen and the Oliver Stone. Those are still the best. Oh, yeah. Heaven and Earth was a real treat. He said Oliver Stone. All right. Hey, if you can touch it, you can catch it. All right. Let's take a quick break for weather, and we'll come back. We'll wrap this up. We're talking about sports moments that made you cry for whatever reason. 312-981-7200. Iron in his thighs? Softness in his eyes and iron in his thighs? Did I hear that correctly? Wow. All right. Welcome back, everybody. As Wild Card Wednesday continues. Yeah, Wild Card Wednesday. 301 area code requesting the Mighty Hercules opening theme song. Okay.
And yes, according to the lyrics, iron in his thighs.
Iron in his thighs. And what was it, his eyes?
Softness.
Softness. Softness in his eyes, but iron in his thighs. Good old Iron Thighs Hercules. That's what they used to call him. That was his nickname. Iron Thighs Hercules. Hey, Iron Thighs, wasn't that that show with Raymond Burr? Oh, no, that was Ironside. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell, and also coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. So let's go through some of the bigger ones that were pointed out here on this article from Bleacher Report, which is about moments in sports where it's okay to cry. And these are for all reasons. These are reasons for sadness, happiness, or emotion, or just a really inspiring story. Right in the top here is Steve Bartman costs the Cubs the 2003 NLCS. That's not true. He didn't cost the Cubs. Perhaps Alex Gonzalez could turn a routine double play. Maybe that could be a thing. You think, Dan? Do you think maybe Alex Gonzalez, you know, turning a double, a very routine double play?
I think that would have been very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. When you've got almost a century without a, you've gone almost a century without a championship, you're willing to blame anybody for a loss. Back in 2003, the Chicago Cubs had their best chance in over 60 years to be World Series champions. They had a great team and a 3-0 lead in Game 6, 3-0 lead in Game 6 of the NLCS, a game that would have sent them to the World Series with a win. Just 5 outs from the Fall Classic, the Cubs were pumped, and destiny seemed to be on their side until Marlins second baseman Luis Castillo hit a pop fly into foul play. It seemed to be a routine play for Cubs left fielder Moises Alou until Steve Bartman got in his way. Alou was angry, jumping up and down in anger. The Cubs quickly got into position, anxious to get those last 5 outs, but they just choked the whole game up. The Marlins exploded for 8 runs in the inning. Many people hold Steve Bartman accountable for the choke, but whether it was his fault or not, Cubs fan everywhere were tearing up at the possibility of letting another opportunity slip through the fingers. That was a terrible night, man. That was just a terrible night. Terrible. I still think, for me at least, and as heartbreaking as that night was, well, the next night is actually when they got eliminated, but as terrible as 2003 was, 84 for me was. I mean, I don't even know what to. I still hate Steve Garvey. I hate Steve Garvey with every fiber of my being. Oh, man. Oh, look who's listening. Look who's here. It's Eddie Volkman. Eddie, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Nick. My dad was as a kid, grew up in Boston, so he loved the Red Sox. And, you know, of course, most of his life was in Chicago, but, you know, always held on to that lifelong love. So he cried, we all did, for him when the Red Sox won. And then... he didn't, unfortunately, live long enough to see the Cubs win the World Series. He died just like a couple of years before that.
Yeah.
So that was a sad moment there, and happy that they won. But I thought about him at the same time. So, you know, those were watershed moments there. But the other thing you were talking about earlier, it wasn't the first of the recent 3 Blackhawks Stanley Cups, but during the second run... I missed 3 goals while I was in the bathroom.
Oh,
but then so I made the mistake of putting it out on Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, once you do that, then everybody starts blowing up my phone. I mean, the people I knew that had my phone number would text me, you know, when they're down by a goal. Are you in the bathroom? So then I actually went in the bathroom. I went in the bathroom for one, I forgot what important game, and they scored while I was in the bathroom. So now I'm into it. So now I believe it. And so for the rest of that series, and then the next Stanley Cup, it was just, you know, people would get downright screaming at me. Like, are you in the bathroom? I'd say, no. I said, what's wrong with you?
This is exactly the same thing that we did to our friend.
Right.
Yeah.
Your buddy, yeah. But, you know, But you had, like, he had four guys yelling at him. I had my entire social media presence.
yelling at Eddie Volkman to go in the bathrooms if the Hawks can score.
Well, and then the thing is, between the time of the first championship and the most recent, streaming video and television came into play, and then it stopped working. Because I could still see it, and the Blackhawks were like, "No, you can see it. You need to actually miss the goal for us to score it."
Got it.
Work anymore.
Exactly. You got to have the right. You got to have the right mojo, Eddie.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good morning.
Take care, buddy. There you go, Eddie Volkman. He was referring to his father. For people who might not know, Harry Volkman was his dad. One of the greatest weathermen. One of the greatest personalities to come out of this city. Well, he's from Boston to come out of this city. He was great. That's pretty funny. But that's really funny. It's like, go get in the bathroom. That's essentially what we did to our friend. We said, you can't leave the... We made him stay in the bathroom. It's so stupid. Now, we mentioned the Boston Red Sox. Eddie just mentioned the Boston Red Sox. How about this one, Dan? This is, it has local ties. Bill Buckner's error.
Yep.
Bill Buckner's, and I felt terrible for Bill Buckner because I was a huge Bill Buckner fan. When he was a Cub, I loved him. And he had a great glove, too. That's the thing about it. Great first baseman, Bill Buckner. I mean, one of the most notorious errors in the history of baseball, he's responsible for. Just one out away from winning the 1986 World Series, the Red Sox were ready to celebrate. Mookie Wilson stepped to the plate as the Mets' final hope. After dragging out a long at bat, Wilson hit a little dribbler down the first base line that wouldn't have been a difficult play in a little league. But sure enough, it went right through the legs of Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner. The Mets took Game 6 and then Game 7. So Game 6 is like notorious. It's just if you go to Boston and you say Game 6, you'll get punched in the mouth. Then it's not a good thing to say. But that's the other thing about it. Like, Bill Buckner was such a great player, you know, and he was on both sides of the, you know, on defense and on offense. He was a great player. Do you remember the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm? Where Buckner showed up and they made a joke about it.
No.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. I can't remember the specifics, but the episode ended where Larry David had a baseball, a very valuable baseball that he had taken and he had to return. You know, something Larry did wrong. You know, like something Larry David did wrong, Bill Buckner shows up as himself, and I can't remember why he's on the episode other than that he's Bill Buckner. But at a very crucial moment, they're in an apartment which has like a balcony, and he tosses the ball to Bill Buckner, and he drops it, and it goes and it flies over the balcony, and they lose the ball because of Bill Buckner. So that setup, I'm being very vague on the setup because I don't remember the exact joke, but Buckner came on that show and joked about it. And it was really funny, and it was like good for him, for Bill Buckner, you know, after all these years, just being able to get out there and joke about it. So, all right, we got a break here. The news is coming up next, and we got some final texts here that we're going to get to about the sports stories.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m.
As we are every weekday morning, I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Wednesday morning, that means it's been Wild Card Wednesday.
Give me Wild Card Wednesday!
312-981-7200. 262 area code requesting Jimmy Soul if you want to be happy. And we are talking about sports moments or games or things like that that made you cry, whether it be for a good reason or a bad reason or an emotional reason of some kind. We'll wrap this up here with some texts. Tom says, a great game was the one in Minnesota. Jim McMahon was out for some reason, came in at halftime and brought the Bears back. Was that 85? Was that 85?
I don't remember if it was 85 or 86, but yeah, definitely in that range.
Because I remember 85, they brought McMahon in. He didn't start. I don't think they took him out or something. But he came back in, and everybody was convinced that he was going to make them. He was going to bring a comeback to them, for them, and beat Miami. Rick says, when the Blackhawks won the first cup, I'm 60, and honestly, I never thought I would see it in my lifetime. The first cup in this era, in 2010. I'm assuming. 815 area code says, Whitney Houston Star-Spangled Banner performance. It was the Bills-Giants 1991 wide right Super Bowl. Veterans in the audience were crying, and it still moves me. That again was the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl during the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. Bonnie from Kenosha said, "My dad was a huge Cubs fan. He died January of 2015. I was watching the game with my residents in the assisted living where I worked, and it was very sad for me. I can imagine." 815 area code says, "Ron Santo's speech when they retired his number at Wrigley. That was great. Yeah, that was beautiful. Good old Ron." 847 area code says, Jimmy V's speech about dealing with cancer at a sports awards show. Squat says, Brian's song made me cry like a baby. I mean, I can't talk, blubbering snot everywhere. It's to the point that I will leave the room during that last scene. I think everybody, we've talked about movies that make you cry and things that make you cry. I think everybody agrees that... That Brian's song is one of those movies that just destroys everybody who sees it. Alan in North Carolina said, New Orleans Saints winning the Super Bowl. I didn't expect the emotions to wash over me, but being a diehard Hoot At fan in Panthers country added to the thrill. Charlie B texts in, I cried like a baby during the 1990 NCAA tournament when Bo Kimble shot his first free throw left-handed in honor of his friend, the late Hank the Bank Gathers, who died on court earlier that year. Wow. Wow. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that story. 414 area code says, when Tiger Woods won the British Open in 2006, it was his first win after his father Earl died, and he cried in the arms of his caddy Steve Williams. Here's another sad one. Pat Tillman leaves for the military and then dies in friendly fire. In May of 2002, Cardinals all-pro safety Pat Tillman turned down a $3 million contract to join the military and fight in the Iraqi war. If you talk about patriotism, that's it. Nobody had more than Tillman, who ended his career just as it was getting started to defend our country. It's not enough to make you tear up, but the fact that Tillman died in a friendly fire while in the military should be. Number two on this list is Jackie Robinson breaks the baseball color barrier. Some things are better left unexplained. This is one of the most important moments in U.S. history, and also one that makes you so happy that you're forced to shed a tear. And then number one on this list of sporting things that you cry at are the Munich Olympic Massacre. The 1972 Munich Olympics were unfortunately headlined by one thing, the Munich Massacre. For those of you who don't know, the Munich Massacre was when members of the Israeli Olympic team were taken hostage and eventually murdered by the terrorist group Black September. 11 Israeli athletes and coaches were killed in this sick event, and I think everybody was crying during that one. So, yeah, sad event. Here's Mitch on WGN. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
So, I got a couple real little short ones in front. By the way, the only time I think I remember crying, even as a Cub fan my whole life, 1989, Greg LeMond, after being accidentally shot by his brother-in-law, came back, still had lead pellets from a turkey hunting accident from years earlier. No one said he could win, and on the very last day of the Tour de France, he came back and beat Laurent Fignon by 7 seconds, and it never happened before.
Wow.
And it was the most amazing ending to a Tour de France in history. If you ever want to Google it, 1989 Tour de France, it's unbelievable.
Wow, that's amazing.
Standing up and down, that was screaming at my TV back when they used to cover it live.
Wow, that's great.
And then I got what I think is the greatest Bill Buckner joke in the world.
Uh-huh.
What do Bill Buckner and Michael Jackson have in common?
What do Bill Buckner and Michael Jackson have in common? What's that?
They both wear one glove for no apparent reason.
All right.
That's great, man.
All right, now here's the story, and it's a little crueler because I don't really follow hockey that much. I watch near the end if the Hawks are doing great. I start tuning in. I've just never been a hockey guy, but yeah. I follow Chicago sports when they're playing great. And but I had a buddy who's notorious for pouting like a baby when his teams don't do what they want to do. And I have a great big TV. He has a small TV. And whatever year that was, when the Hawks won with, what, was it 17 seconds to go?
Yes. Well, there were two goals that were scored in 17 seconds, back-to-back.
Okay.
And they did, and that was 2013.
All right, I'll try to keep up to 13. I should be able to remember that.
Yeah.
So, the deal is, he's at my house watching the game, and as it's getting nearer and nearer the end, he's pouting and getting louder and louder and louder. And finally, he gets up, throws something down, and says, "I'm out of here. I've had this."
Oh, no.
Storms out of the house.
Oh, no.
And drives about 17 miles from my home to his home. And I knew darn well he wouldn't tune it in, and I start seeing what's happening. Oh. And I reach over, grab my phone to call him, and I thought, no. And I waited, and then I watched a little bit of the celebration, and I tried to time in my mind, when will he be getting home? And I reached over, dialed the phone, and I said, "Hey, how's it going?" He goes, "Good. Nice timing. I just pulled up my driveway." I go, "Perfect. You've got time to run in and turn it on." And he said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Yeah, go in and turn on your TV, you little baby. And I hung up, and I just didn't say anything else.
Did he call you back, Mitch?
He actually did call me back, and he said, "I probably should be mad at you, but I guess I got it coming." And I said, "You absolutely do."
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah.
That is a great story.
And here's the deal. He actually stopped doing that, and he basically grew up as a Sox fan, but he fell in love with the Cubs the last 3 or 4 years. And he'll call me now and then, and he absolutely stopped doing that. Because if you'll remember, I think it was 2 years ago, how many Cub games where they came back from looking like it was over.
Yeah.
And they started winning games in the eighth or ninth inning.
Yeah.
And the Cubs broke him of that habit of being a baby and tuning out.
That's
great. Until the very end.
That is so hilarious. So that's a great one. Great story. Mitch, thanks for the call.
Be sure to tell your dad the Bill Buckner joke.
I will. I bet he knows that one. He probably knows that one. All right, Mitch, thank you, buddy.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. They both have one glove for no apparent reason. I think I heard that one years ago, and I'd forgotten it. All right. Let's take a break here. We got the weather here coming up, and then we'll come back with more on 720 WGN.